When I make like splatter movies and genre movies, that's when I'm in my esse, like I'm in my most passionate moment. So I become like the movie myself. I become crazy. I scream and I throw myself on the ground and I don't care about anything. Yeah.
Welcome to Sack Me Play, the podcast that features queer filmmakers and filmmaking. This episode is a talk between me, Sam Message, and the Swedish-based filmmaker and sometimes actor, Alessio Araci. The conversation took place in SACMI's packed headquarters in Majorna, in Gothenburg, following the screening of Alessio Araci's trilogy consisting of three short films, Chavo, Mami, and Lil Tuke, all of them focusing on queer Roma experiences and dealing with themes like sorrow, oppression, coping, and traditions.
Chavo means boy or son in Romani language. Mami means grandmother. And Lil Tuke means a letter to you. It's a very personal and private thing, but it, like many years ago, I suffered a big sorrow. And this is a kind of healing process for me.
Glömde din mobil. Det här är också ditt. Du har nu Chavo. En kebab utan vitsås.
Nice. Men du bjuder.
You've just heard a scene from the short film Chavo. The scene shows a bereaved father and a young gay man as they struggle with loss, forgiveness, and homophobia in the Roma community. Swinging the pendulum to the other side, let's dig into Alessio Araci's love for splatter and horror movies. Camp, the burlesque, and bizarre, with a work-in-progress mockumentary, partly shot on Super 8. That was the glorious sound of a TV journalist's head getting smashed to smithereens in a sudden stampede. Although, in reality, this was most likely a melon, not a human head. Don't worry, no journalists were hurt in the making of this mockumentary. Throughout this gore splatter comedy, Alessio's love for that classic B-movie aesthetic shines through. Prior to the head smashing, we've just seen two gay rabbits vigorously going at it, like rabbits. Picture this. Pink bunny ears, sugar cubes for teeth, bow ties, cutesy bunny makeup, all muzzled up and getting down and dirty. Everyone's having a great time. That is, until they're suddenly shot dead. So the first thing I wanted to ask about was this last number that we saw. It's, you know, features, you've called it, working title.
What you saw, the last part, like the last clip with all the, it's filmed on Super 8 material. It's, I filmed this 10, 11, 12, 13 years ago. So I filmed for many years and it was supposed to be a feature film. But it was eventually too expensive with the Super 8. It was cheap at one point, but then it's like it's like with gasoline. It goes up and down, like, you know, suddenly you cannot drive a car anymore. Same, I could not film anymore. And the red line disappeared and somebody moved abroad and everything just kind of fucked up. So I sat on this material and I've been sitting on this material for so many years. And then just maybe 6 months ago, I was talking with you, Desiree, and many others. Like, I have this idea. I'm going to make a mockumentary about this movie that was never completed. And I'm going to, like, recycle the material, kind of, and use it in a new kind of thing.
Ja, jag spelade ju en kvinna som var lesbisk och sen så skulle vi skjuta, kaniner tror jag vi skulle skjuta eller någonting. Så det var liksom en roll med både, ja vad ska man kalla det, en roll som var både dramatisk och komisk också på sätt och vis också.
So this is what you saw a short taste of, this first clip with the interview of the woman. This is like, yeah, 12 years later, and I'm like doing a headshot and like asking her about the movie. And actually, it's very funny because the woman you saw in the picture, she was, I headhunted her because, I hunted her because she had been in 4 Fellini movies, like an Italian director. So she was really, like, she never had big roles, but she was always like in Italian cinema in the 60s and the 70s. She was in more than maybe 80 films, but nobody knows about her. So, but I knew about her. Like, I realized we lived in the same city, and so I hunted her for this like bondmorsa who's shooting these rabbits, yeah.
I mean, for me, I think what's so funny is that I first know you from Die Hard,
yeah,
which has a poster for that film, yeah, just over there.
Yeah.
And that's kind of in this same themes, right, of it's very camp and it's like this film, it's this kind of slap in the face of this other world. Mm. You know, it's camp, it's violently erotic. This one, you know, it's super gory, it's fantasy.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know, what was it about these themes? What is it about these themes that really resonates with you?
I always loved genre movies. Genre movies is the closest kind of to my heart, you know. And when I was a kid, my mother used to, because I lived alone a lot with my mother. I had different situations, but for a period in my life, me and my mother, we lived alone and she had to work. So in those times, you could rent like 10 VHS for like 69 crowns or something. And so she used to rent movies for me. I got to pick the movies, fortunately. So I picked, of course, all the horror and genre movies. And she let me alone. Like, the VHS player was my babysitter, kind of. So I watched all these movies and I guess it had effect. I became crazy. But I was always an extrovert. I was always seeking kicks, and I always loved in your face culture. I love when you see everything immediately.
Like, I think we saw everything in that first clip.
Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't trigger warn you before I showed this. It's a lot of like blood and dicks and whatever, like body fluids. But and then I come from the do-it-yourself culture, you know. I made things always kind of camp. I never had big budgets. I always just used a camera, if there was even a camera, you know, and it came from that idea. And this movie, the Super 8 movie, it's when I found this old Super 8 camera, and I found like cheap Super 8 film, and I just started trying it, and then I got hooked for some years, and I filmed all this material, which then gained dust, kind of, yeah. But now it's reviving.
Now it's reviving, yeah. Again. So I just wanted to pick up on that you said, if there was even a camera. That makes me feel like this was just going on when there were no cameras as well.
Yeah.
Like, this is just a normal day in the life.
Yeah.
It's not a mockumentary. It's a documentary.
No, it's my life. It's my life.
No, but I think what is was so amazing about this evening is that, like, obviously there's a massive stylistic difference between these two parts, you know. Mm-hmm. On one side, you know, we've got with feature, it's this obscene and erotic and bizarre, and that's really contrast to the trilogy, these other three films, which is, you know, the real and the right now. And when you're thinking about the style, it goes from like camp and gore and DIY to this, you know, I'm thinking of Chavo, that first film in the trilogy. It's this like super sleek narrative driven work where like every detail seems to be curated, everything is telling us something about the narrative and about what's happening. And I wanted to just get into, what was this journey between these two things? What drove you? How did you get there?
Well, my biggest dream is to make genre movies. I I want to make action, I want to make horror, I want to make thriller, like, but action and horror are my favorites, and splatter even, but I want to put them in a queer context because that's what interests me. And I feel that there aren't so many movies historically that deals with, like, maybe, you know, the protagonist being like queer or gay or anything. So I want to change that, and I also want to, you know, Sweden doesn't have so much genre movies, a bit, but not so much. We need to make more, and I hope that in time people will trust filmmakers to make more genre. But the journey between those two is that there's two different things to that. One is that I thought of it maybe a bit as a strategy. Also, I'm a very curious person, so I like to try new styles, and I like to try drama. I think it's very fun. And also, you know, genre movie always has a kind of dramatic ground. You need a drama ground to make a good genre movie too. So they are close, but also not. So it was also a strategy, like, okay, I'm gonna prove to you all that I'm able to do also this drama. Which I like to watch drama, but I don't feel it's my thing. I feel I'm a bit lying to myself. But you see, in those movies, even though they're kind of serious, and there's still elements of genre, like there's still a bit of like horror, like just very, very, very little. But I'm not losing the voice completely, my own voice. For sure. Yeah. And the second thing is these three movies that you saw, this trilogy, as I call it, it's Chavo. It's Chavo means boy or son in Romani language. Mami means grandmother, and Lil Tuki means a letter to you. So this is a kind of trilogy, and it's a very personal and private thing. But it, like many years ago, I suffered a big sorrow, and this is a kind of healing process for me.
I want to think about this film then, Mami, because something that I thought was really beautiful about it is it's kind of a dance, right? It's this kind of dance where everybody seems to know the choreography apart from the gay grandson who doesn't realize that everyone else knows exactly what's going on. It's like, and I think this is something that really resonates with a lot of queer people who might have been the ignorant one as everyone was doing the dance around them, waiting for them to find out. And I think one of the ways that it's so powerful in this film is that it's written in a very subtle way. It's very nuanced. And I wanted to ask you what this writing process was like. How did you manage to get it to be so nuanced, so real?
It was kind of difficult to make that movie because the woman who plays the grandmother, she was almost 90 when we filmed this. And she has a very good memory, but what we did was that I had a script, but she was almost blind, so she couldn't read properly. So I couldn't like read the script, so I had to explain everything to her. I had to explain what I want from this dialogue and what I want from this scene, and went through the script over and over, but then she put her final touch on it. So that's the process with the like script and how we filmed the movie. And also the young woman who plays the granddaughter, she also helped us. But do you mean more like the process with the dealing with the queerness in the like...
I'm also really interested in that as well. Yeah.
Well, she's very open-minded as a person. We discussed this theme before. Oh, she was. She passed away, unfortunately. Yeah. She rest in peace. She was very open-minded with queerness. She was one of the more open-minded, like Romani elderly people who didn't care so much about traditions in that way. She was very traditionally, always dressed traditionally, always, you know, a believer, and always, you know, the stereotype kind of an old Roma woman. But she was very progressed in her mind. So. She said, because she knew at the point when we started filming, she knew that she was going to die. She knew that she had cancer.
Oh, wow.
So she said to me, she said, I want to leave something behind.
Mm. Wow, that's powerful.
So that's nice. It's a bit moving, actually. Yeah. She said, I want to leave something behind that helped, because I fought all my life, she said, to change perspective on Roma people. but now I want to like give something which will help you to help the perspective wow. inside.
That's really powerful.
Like for gay yeah. and so she was really cool.
Yeah, she sounds like she was really fucking cool. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I mean, I think that's it feels really like that realness comes through then in that way that you navigated that as a, they feel like real conversations. Yeah, it's yeah. not necessarily this script following, but this a real conversation between generations.
That's yeah, really it feels amazing. Like that. I mean, it sticks very much to the script, but she made it very personal in a way, like, yeah, so...
Hallå! Om vi dig som trodde att han ska bada med telefonen.
Yeah, and I wanted to continue on this line of questioning around Mami. I think something that the film does really well is it shines a light on this kind of, on the internalization of shame, the internalization of prejudice and queer phobia. You know, another thing that I think can resonate with a lot of different types of queer people and trans people. And I wanted to ask you, in this film, we see it through the lens of the grandmother-grandson relationship. Why was it that you chose that relationship as opposed to a parent and a child?
Well, first of all, I think there's like in society in general, like there's a lot of age phobia. I don't know if you say like that in English, but there's a lot of age phobia. Like there's a belief that older people, they don't, they're not as progressive as young people. They don't know as much, but actually they know more. I mean, what she says also in the scene is like, you know, I've been around, I know, there's always been, you know, so she knows this.
Do you think that there's something specific about speaking to her in this grandmother role within the Roma community?
Yeah,
perhaps?
Of course it's a strategy too. I mean, because the elderly are very respected in the Roma community. So if nobody would ever, you know, say anything bad about her, you know, nobody would ever dare. It would be a great shame. So it's excellent to pick the older people because nobody will. But if she would say like, it's okay, then everybody be like, okay, it's okay, okay, yeah, you know. So it's a good strategy. It was a strategy. Yeah. Plus, in the trilogy, I tried in the first movie in Chavo, I tried to put it a bit from the father's perspective, like, and also a bit the boyfriend, but more the father. And then it was the grandmother. And then in the third movie, Lil took it, it's more from the boyfriend's kind of perspective. And I feel those three movies, they when I watch them now, I was like, oh, it's all the same movie, but it's also not. But in one way, it deals with kind of the same thing, but from different perspectives. It's like sorrow, it's, you know, understanding, yeah, coping, all that.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. Mm. Yeah, and I mean, that comes across in the film as well when she says, like, anyone says something, I'll protect you. So yeah. You feel that power in her as well, that she's like, well, no one's going to fuck with me.
Great.
I'm super old. No, but I think to get on to my next question, I think in all three of these films, this trilogy, we see like the power of community and we see like the importance of conforming to community values. So the importance of following the rules of the community. You know, in Lil Tuk, we see this like how people, there's so much pain that they can't talk to each other. There's this secret kind of partner in death. In Chavi, you know, queerness is being pushed away as something that's inherently non-Roma. You see again in like in Mami that even though that she says, you know, there's always been gay Roma, she also complains like, oh, you know, he's spending too much time with non-Roma, he's becoming non-Roma, and complaining about that. And I wanted to ask you, you know, clearly for me, these things show this importance of community value and following the rules. Why do you think that this conformity is important to the Roma community? And why do you think that it was important to explore this in the film?
historically it's been important as a safe thing, to be safe, not because people always wanted to hurt, for example, Roma people and minorities in general. So it's been for protection originally, all these things, we need to stick to them because otherwise someone might kill us or hurt us. And then there's the clean rules, like I don't know how it's called in English, but there's like you can be ritually dirty and you can also be physically dirty. Like if I touch the ground, I will be physically dirty, but there's also something that can make your soul dirty and it's much more difficult to get rid of. And that's more tradition side. And the other things with the like cleanness, not to get dirty, was also before a thing, because people lived on the ground. So if you didn't separate the ground from your food and stuff, you could become sick. So that's very important. But to answer your question, which I'm not doing, I'm just babbling around. I think to be able to speak to a wider like minority audience, I of course want to keep some things with the traditions are beautiful, like some things are nice, and some things need to be kind of updated. But it is important with identity, like language, like everything. And still I'm not answering your question. Where am I getting with this?
It was, I mean, I think you've totally answered my first question, which was around like, why do you think these values are so strong?
Yeah.
But maybe, yeah, my second part was, why did you think it was important for you to explore them in this film?
Because I you mean the traditions, like the importance? Yeah. I like them. I like the traditions. I think we could develop them into being like modern. Yeah. But also like, that everybody can, you know, use them or include that it can be more inclusive. And of course, I mean, it's the culture. Like, it's just the culture also.
Yeah.
I don't know if I have a better answer. Yeah.
No, I don't think you need a better answer. Mm. I think it is something that's very common in situations where there's a like a minority culture under a bigger hegemonic dominating culture, is that there's this conflict between we have to like keep doing what we're doing and like keep hold of our traditions, but at the same time that can become a way that you push away other types of change, like for instance I don't know if like women's rights
exactly, it's a way of protecting, but it can also limit very much, and that you think that like everything outside is dangerous and doesn't belong to our culture, even though you really know deep down that actually there is also that in this culture, but we have to keep ourselves separated to be protected. We can't integrate too much.
Absolutely.
Suck me, play.
Unfortunately, like, you know, in the Roma community is still very common with this, you know, you have to marry young. And I've been trying to explain to some people, like, yeah, but you know, if you marry a gay man to a heterosexual woman, she will be depressed, he will be depressed, you know.
Yeah, nothing,
nobody wins. Nobody wins. And the opposite way around. So I'm like, why? What's the thing, you know?
Yeah,
like,
what just, we're doing this for.
Just let... but it's really difficult. It's about honor.
Yeah.
Honor is still really important. And very high... highly, you know, taken valued, after valued.
And that's something that takes a long time to change.
It takes a long time, but there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of queer Roma movement, like in Europe, in the US, and it's really developing. But most of those people are like rejects, you know, like they don't have contact with their family or it's very little. So you have to choose a bit.
Well, I hope that changes.
Yeah, I hope so too. That's why I make these movies.
Absolutely.
Because I want to change it. Yeah. So maybe a bit to get back to that question, actually, when I said this, I mean, with the first movie, the splatter movie, I'm like making it very much for myself. I mean, it's what I really love. These other movies, they're, as I said, more for a wider audience. I want more people to be able to watch it. I mean, I could not convince anyone with the splatter movie. I could not like, okay, you want to bring this into the Roma community? No. So I have to take like small steps. That's also why Chavo is very, you know, I love sex on the movies. I love violence. I love I don't love violence, but I mean I think it's nice on movies, and especially sex. Everybody who's worked with me knows that I've been like, you know, always making these scenes.
Sorry, can you get that on your gravestone? Just I love sex and violence. Yeah.
No, but everybody who works with him knows what I really, really want. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or what I like, you know. So, but I had to think more tactical with the other movies. Mm, I had to think like, absolutely. Okay, I want to help young people.
Mm.
I want to make a change. Mm. I can't show skin. I can't do, I didn't even put the kiss or anything in any of, you know, it's because I want to be able to show them also to people who are not so open-minded so they can, you know, I think you need baby steps with some communities. Yeah.
Absolutely. And this is a really great way because it carries so much emotional weight and it explores it in this nuanced way. It's a great way for people to be able to engage with that story without being pushed away by things that they would have a gut reaction against.
Yeah, and sure. I think about the honesty also that I feel somewhat like I'm faithful to myself when I make movies that I don't really, really would love to do, but I feel a pressure. I have to make them and I enjoy making them. But the only thing that I feel I'm not lying because it's very personal. Like I take it out of my own experiences. And that's, I think when I make drama, I have to do it because I'm really bad at coming up with like drama ideas that would be like, you know, a selling point, I guess. Yeah.
Right, what you know best, I guess, is the...
Yeah, the adage, like, I know everything about how to make head crushes and you know this.
Yeah, but I mean, this is kind of coming in on my next question, this discussion, not about the head crushing, I'm sorry to say, we're back to the serious drama. But I'm really curious about what kind of rooms that you've shown this in. I mean, like showing it in a room like this obviously means something completely different to showing it to a room of middle-class straight Swedes at a film festival or showing it in a room of Roma people or in a Roma community. How has it been received by the Roma community? If it's not been there, how do you think it would be received?
So I've shown it to Roma people, but individually. None of the films has screened at any like Roma festival. I'm gonna send them all to Akidikea, which is the Europe's biggest festival in the autumn.
Good luck.
I'm gonna send two of them there and hopefully they will be, you know, but that festival is very progressive. I mean, everybody goes there is open-minded kind of. So I haven't screened it yet at something more conventional, or how should I say, more
traditional
or, yeah, that's the word. I haven't, but SVT Minoritet will probably buy it. Wow. But that will be maybe, so then it will be available like online.
Oh, kind cool. Of
for everyone.
Yeah.
Wow. I wanted to spread it. I would like to do also school like tour with the movie.
That
maybe
would be
next
really
year.
Good. That's a really good idea. Yeah. We hopped over one of the questions that I had, which was in Lil Tuk. Why is there this, there's this scene where she's spinning round and she's dancing and there's this lone blue balloon, which is like dancing around her. Tell me about the balloon. I'm really curious.
Yeah. Okay. So it's actually so boring. Yeah. I mean, so first it was just like her kid left the balloon on the floor. It's so simple. But then we discussed, me and her, the woman who's dancing, we said like, oh, it's a good symbol because in the Finnish Roma community, like she's a Finnish Roma, you know, the dress maybe, it's very traditional for them. They have very, very strict rules about floor. Everything that drops to the floor, touches the floor, has to be thrown away, even if it's valuable. You know, there's no way to clean it after it's touched the floor. So she's sitting on the floor in the dress was kind of provocative.
I see.
For anyone who's not from that group, it would be like people who don't know it wouldn't, you know, think about it. But you never sit on the floor like that. Mm-hmm. It's really like...
it's a no-no.
It's a big no-no. She would have to throw everything which was touched the ground. So, kind of. So, it depends a bit from family to family how strict you are and so on. But generally... So, the balloon was more like a symbol like for the floor. But it didn't really come out in a good way. It's like...
But when you say it like that, the balloon obviously, like as it gets kicked up, it touches the floor over and over again. Yeah, I don't know. There's maybe something in there.
Also, like what it's not. This is a work in progress. I'm thinking about how much to angle it later. So, for example, she's all alone. You only see her alone because nobody will ever come home to her again because her brother probably is gay, like, or he is, like, you know, and maybe this came out and she will be alone forever, like, nobody will come and eat at her table or anything, so it's a bit like, there's other scenes, for example, where she's alone and there's more of this traditional things that we see, so I'm thinking about how much to put into the movie and not, we'll see, because it's not really a movie about traditions, it's more a movie about, you know, sorrow and grief and, yeah.
Hmm.
But I guess the balloon has something to do with the floor, yeah. Like her being ritually defiled, you say like that?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Her being ritually defiled and this balloon bounces around and as you said, like it had a bit to do with that. We kept it because of this.
Yeah.
But not everyone will, maybe people will read in other things into it. Yeah.
You're listening to Suck Me Play.
I have really loved having this conversation. I think there's been some really amazing answers and I've learned a lot about your process and the Roma community and the films.
Thank you.
I would love to open it up to anyone else who has a question. We have a mic here to pass around or we'll be taken around by one of our little elves.
Don't be shy.
Thank you. I went to the same class as Alessio. So I followed a lot of his process through the time. I'm just very curious, like, what's your next plan?
Thank you, dear, for your question. So I always have like 1,000 things going on. Like I start like 1,000 things and then I will see which ones will make it to the end. But so this mockumentary is more my kind of actual low budget project. I always try to have a low budget project while I'm trying to do a high budget project. So the high budget projects always takes longer time and there's more, you know, like you have to do like this, people think and say and leave feedback and you maybe have to change things. While the low budget, I can do it exactly as I want it, what I think is best. So I'm always trying to have low budget and high budget. So the high budget that I'm doing right now is a movie called Slynglarna. It's in development. I'm writing the script now. It's a kind of gay action road movie. We'll see about the budget, how much action we can get, but hopefully, like, I just hired a photographer, like a director of photography who had like creative, good, cheap solutions for some things. I might get what I want. So high budget Yanni, like, you know, kind of. And then I have this mockumentary, which I will let it take time. I will start to film interviews with the actors who were and try to create a story around this Super 8 material. And then I have one movie that I made at Valen, which you are also acting in, and you are acting in it, and you know, everyone is in it. And that one is also in process of like the editing process, the final process. So I have 3 projects going on, and I'm not in a rush. Yeah.
Any other victims for the altar? I have a very willing victim back here.
First of all, I just want to say that if there's anyone who can make me love genre film, it's you. And it's so like joyful to see those images that I never see otherwise. And I'm just so happy to see it. The other is just a reflection about the Mummy film. I have the feeling that I never ever want to watch another coming out movie. But then when I watch this one, I'm like, wow, it's really something about, you know, the unconditional love of an elder person like that, that makes me feel it's kind of a ritual, like a healing ritual, to just watch it. And I just thought it was beautiful, and that we all maybe need to have that, like, forgiving love somehow. and also, like, remembering things that we keep inside when we think that they are done and we're over with it and we've, you know, moved on. And then, like, just seeing her sitting there and telling her grandchild how much she loves him, it was really like a healing process somehow. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I think when you asked also the question about similar, and I was thinking, to me, something with maybe like the characters and also like, yeah, so I'm wondering a little bit about like the casting. I mean, I know you said already that there's not that many actors maybe that you could use, but I feel like the roles, and also that you said that like this older woman that she also put a lot of her own maybe own stuff or feelings into the role, and I think that there's something with the characters in your films that's like very, like, they have many different sides in just who they are in a way. And I think so I just wondering, like, how you choose, like, how, like, what kind of casting do you do, or what is it that make you like want to have someone in your film?
I always look at eyes. Eyes is what I look at first when I'm watching. When I'm doing casting now for one of my movies, I always cover. I look on the screen and I cover people's faces like this, and I see what happens in the eyes. I go always on eyes first. Like, if you want to be in a horror movie or a splatter movie, especially like splatter movies, then you have to be able to open your eyes so wide, you know, really wide. You have to be able to be like, oh my God, somebody just crushed my head, or like my friend's head. You have to be able to show like big expressions. So always, also when I'm doing casting, I have like, I send, like, normally nowadays after the pandemic, but also before, you ask people to do self tapes. Like, you send them information about what to do, like steps. And one of my steps is make a 1 minute video where you just express yourself as much as you can in all the feelings that you know. And yeah, that talks to me a lot.
Great tips for any young horror actors in the room.
Because I remember, you know, I remember from my directing during that times that I remember myself screaming, more eyes, more eyes, 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 eyes. And like, because people were like keeping eyes too close. And I was like, eyes. I remember that's what I screamed the most. Ergon, eyes, Ergon. This I remember. It's true, actually.
Joyful days on set.
Yeah. I'm such... when I make like splatter movies and genre movies, that's when I'm in my esse, like I'm in my most passionate moment. So I become like the movie myself. I become crazy. I scream and I throw myself on the ground and I don't care about anything. Yeah.
Wow. Sounds empowering.
Yeah, I miss those days. So I'm going to like go in that direction eventually. This is just a break, you know, to heal and to deal with like the past, grief, sorrow. These like three short films. It's a trilogy and it's done now, soon. So I'll move on. Yeah, done my years of therapy. Everything is good. Yeah.
Got to put that head back together so you can stamp on it again. Yeah. Stamp
exactly.
And splatter.
So I think this is maybe something like a red line through my movies, that I am always looking for eyes and faces and expressions. I'm not looking for small expressions. I'm looking for big. I mean, in the last movie, maybe Lil Tuke, like the one, maybe that's the one with the smallest expressions. But I also felt with the voiceover that that's the most important thing. And, you know, but eyes maybe first. Yeah.
Is there one more person who wants to ask a question? Yeah. We'll do one last one.
Yeah, as a Middle Eastern gay person here as well, like the first movie really resonated with me because it really helps me, like, heal my inner child, because, you know, it's been a struggle also growing up in a conservative family, you know, so it really resonates with me. So I'm thinking, what was your progress? Like, what drives you forward? What is your core, that driving force that makes you create these? Because it's about gay people in a conservative cultures.
Gay people are dying. Young gay people kill themselves. It happens every day. That's what drives me. Yeah. Really. It's nothing else. It's not like, I don't care about money. I don't care about fame, anything. It's just, I don't want people to die. There's more important things to life than to die from, like, not being accepted, or, like, you know, this really is very strong for me. I've talked with so many young people, like young Roma, young people from other groups, and they suffer a lot. Yeah. And not everybody lives, like, through it, unfortunately. So it's really important stuff. Yeah. And I cherish, and I love everyone who makes movies to change, to draw art that tries to, like, change these things. I will always stand by their side, kind of, you know, and, like, keep their backs. Yeah. So that's what drives me.
Wow. Sorry, I'm a little bit stunned. It's just really amazing to hear about it, and amazing work that you're doing. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
This talk was recorded on May 17th, 2023. My name is Sam Message, and this episode was edited and mixed by Marlin Holgersson for SACMI. Take care.